Brian Smargan, I'm an alcoholic. You may have seen this box in the back of the room. On it, it says a newcomer ask. Along with this box, we have a stack of 3x5 cards and some pencils. And what we like to have people do is to write down questions that they have about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, put the question in the box, and we pick a question each week to be answered using AA-approved literature and our own panel of experts. This week's question is, I heard you should not talk in a meeting until you are sober for 1 year. But what if you are called on? I've heard that before, too. Actually, the version I've heard is you should keep your mouth shut for the first year you're in AA because you got nothing to say.
I wouldn't be here if that were the case. I never would have got to this meeting. But
anyway, there's no rule on that. There's nothing in our literature that says when you can and cannot share. Most recovery homes, including the one I went to, had a rule that we would have outside groups come into our house for meetings 4 times a week, and everybody was required to share at every meeting. And that meeting wasn't going to end until everybody did. So when I got out of there and was going to meetings, of course, that's the habit I had, was to share at a meeting. Even if I wasn't called on, if there was a lull in the action, I would jump in there. I don't know what people thought about that, but I was always encouraged by my sponsor to be a good AA, be a good member, contribute to a meeting. If you're asked to share, then share. So I never passed, even if I didn't have anything to say, which was, of course, rare. But so that's my take on that. If you get called on, be a good AA. Contribute to the meeting. Try to make it a better meeting. And the ultimate authority is, beside your higher power, ask your sponsor. You should already have a sponsor to help you in this program. See what your sponsor thinks about you sharing in meetings. And that's all I got on that. Thank you. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, sober alcoholics around the world. It is now time for our featured speaker of the evening. This is brought to you by the Valley Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, the undefeated, undisputed king of speaker meetings. This event is brought to you for your sobriety pleasure. And now, let's get ready for recovery. Our speaker has been a sober member of our fellowship since 2/22 of 08. He has been continually in service as a coffee maker, treasurer, secretary, PICPC, that's not even that name, and sponsor. So now, with all the earnestness at your command, will you welcome, please, from Fresno, California, Ryan A.
Hi, my name's Ryan. I'm an alcoholic. I'm like super nervous. I don't like speaking in front of small groups of people, and this is like not a small group of people, but I don't know. I was like complaining about it. Not complaining, but I was reminded that I'm not up here for me. I'm up here to try to help other people. But my sobriety date, like you said, is February 22nd, 2008. I don't know, I just say it because it's important to me. It was cool seeing everybody come up here and get chips. Time's not necessarily the most important thing, but my time's important to me. I don't know, I grew up in a completely normal household. My parents were married and are still married, and I have a perfect sister who like pissed me off my whole life, and it really like baffled me for a long time because there's no external reasons in my environment that that made me be an alcoholic. There was no like abuse or anything like that, and I just thought I was like just messed up. I was crazy because there was absolutely no reason for me to be doing the things that I was doing from a young age. I had a pretty normal life when I was a kid, and when I got into high school, I think between junior high and high school, I started, hanging out with my friends and drinking occasionally and doing some other things. And by the time I was a sophomore, I was getting messed up before school on a regular basis and at lunch and after school. And I figured out early on that if I took care of all my stuff, if I like did my schoolwork and didn't get caught doing anything bad, then everyone would leave me alone. And so I did that. I was a pretty good student, and I never got in trouble, and everyone left me alone and let me do what I wanted to do. And my parents are like, they were good parents. They're a little bit controlling. They're like typical Asian American parents. They like wanted me to be a doctor and made me do some things that I probably didn't want to do, like piano lessons and things like that. But I don't know. I grew up pretty sheltered, and when I graduated from high school, I went away to college, and I had never been out of the control of my parents. And when I was in high school, that was kind of when the progression started of my disease. And it was still fun at that point. It was I was like not even category one yet. But when I went away to college, I was living in a dorm that was like half of the community college kids and half of the college kids. And those community college kids were definitely not there to go to school. And they taught me how to party. Like, I had been partying in high school, but these guys had like kegs in their room and bars, and these are like dorm rooms that are like 10 by 10, and they have like full bars and stuff. And that's where I really learned how to drink. And I was only away at school in San Luis Obispo for like a year, but soon into my first semester, I had kind of figured it out. Like, I couldn't find the same group of people to drink with every day, so I had like three or four groups of people, and on any given day I could find at least one group of those people to drink with. So I was basically just getting messed up every day. I never went to class. I'd like show up and take tests, so I'd show up like a couple times a semester, and it was like, it was all bad. I that was the first time I experienced craving. And, I thought it was normal. I thought all college students drank every day, and all college students drank in the morning, and that's just not true. There are a lot of college students that actually go to school and, get good grades and stuff, and I was not one of those ones. So after that year, I was pretty messed up, and I wasn't doing very well in school, so I came back home. And when I came back to Fresno, I found my friends that had stayed here were doing the same things that I was doing, and some of them were worse than me, so I moved into a house with a couple of the guys that were worse than me. And at this point, it wasn't really that fun anymore. I was blacking out all the time. Right before school had finished in San Luis Obispo, this kind of stuff would happen to me all the time, and I don't share these stories because they're funny or anything. It shows the progression of my disease throughout this short period of time. And I would black out a lot, and we were drinking up in my friend's room, and he lives on the third story, and I was on the first floor. And I blacked out at some point, and I just stood up. And when I woke, I don't know exactly what happened, but what I think happened was I just dragged my face along the wall all down three stories of stairs. Because when I woke up, the whole side of my face was just like red and bloody. And, you know, those kinds of things used to happen to me. And I would wake up sometimes in my bed, sometimes in random people's rooms or on couches or floors. And that's how college was, and that's how it was after that. So when I got home, I stayed with a couple of my friends. We were renting a house, and I went back to school, and for some reason I like kind of pulled it together for a little while, and I got back in school, and I got decent grades again. I think you know, it's the disease kind of started scaring me, and it scared me straight for a little bit. But I'm a true alcoholic, and quickly things like went out of control again. And you know, I had done well in school, so I had gotten this job for the summer in the Bay Area, and when I went up there, things just went way worse. The kind of business that I work in, drinking is just kind of like part of the deal. And you know, there was like firm-sponsored happy hour once a week, and everyone just drank all the time. And I like created a ton of wreckage up there. I was like dating my boss, who was in a relationship, and it was totally bad. I was like getting in fights with my roommate because he could tell that there was something wrong with me. And I had like kind of quit eating. I would eat like just randomly, like maybe once a day, once every couple days, because I was spending all my money on booze, and I was making good money. And when I came back to Fresno, I had nothing. Like I didn't have a penny to my name. So I came back, and I probably weighed about 115 pounds, and I moved back into my parents' house because I didn't have any money, and they knew something was wrong with me. You could tell it had, my disease had started affecting me physically like quite a while before that. And, you know, they basically sat me down and asked me what was wrong. And I like kind of broke down, and I told them that like I was like totally messed up, and I was in trouble, and I didn't know what to do. And my good enabling parents sent me to rehab, and I went to rehab quite a few times after that. Over the next, I was 20 at the time, and over the next 3 years, I didn't stay sober for longer than a few months at a time. And I go to a bunch of different rehabs. I went to 4 rehabs, and you know, what I discovered when the seed was basically planted there. My parents spent all that money and sent me to treatment, and the thing I got out of all those treatment centers was AA, really. They brought meetings in and took us out to meetings, and you know, I never really went to meetings after I left. I would go for a little while, but I would come and just kind of hang out, and then I'd leave, smoke a lot of cigarettes, and that was about it. And, you know, the last time I got out of treatment, I had pretty much progressed to like third, fourth category characteristics that they talk about in Two Wives. And, doctors were telling my parents that that they didn't think I could ever get sober, and my parents had pretty much given up on me, and the disease was really affecting me physically. Every time I'd go out, I would basically just run until the wheels fell off, and it was really, really bad. But so I got out of my last treatment center, and I stayed sober for a couple months, and then I went on my last run, and it was about a 9-month run, and that was the worst my disease got for me. I was homeless. Homeless is the right word. I was living out of my car periodically. I'd get hotel rooms from time to time, and I was just hanging out with people that I shouldn't be hanging out with and doing things I shouldn't be doing, and I was unemployable, so I was doing things that are against the law, and after that 9-month run, at the end of it, I had been staying in this hotel room. It was a really crappy motel for like a week, and I remember waking up. And this hadn't been the first day like this, but it's the last day I remember waking up like this, and just I had been tired of it for a long time. I had like wanted to stop for a long time, and I just I knew how, but I didn't think I knew how, and I kind of remembered the whole 12-step recovery thing that they had drilled into me in all those treatment centers, and that was like kind of the only thing I hadn't really tried. I tried everything else pretty much, and so I kind of just started going to meetings. I got lucky, and I met a lot of people that I identified with early on. There was quite a big young people's following in Fresno in the fellowship, and I met a lot of those people early on, and that was a huge blessing for me, because even if somebody that didn't look like me, if their story was exactly like mine, I just couldn't see it. I was too focused on the outside. And it took me a while to identify with people, and I identify with my sponsor now as much as anybody, and he's quite a bit older than me, and he has quite a bit more time than me. But I met all these young people when I was new, and a lot of them had multiple years of sobriety, and I couldn't get that, because I couldn't even get 6 months. And I kind of just fell in with what they were doing. I went to a ton of meetings with them. I was like totally crazy when I was new. So I'd go to 2 meetings a day, sometimes 3 meetings a day. And, I got a sponsor really early on, and he got me a coffee commitment at a meeting. And, there were times like I didn't, like, this is how important service has been in my sobriety. There were times that like I was like, I really wanted to go out, and I couldn't, because I had to show up and make coffee at this men's meeting. And, I've always tried to follow the suggestions that my sponsors have given me. And, I definitely don't do that perfectly, but, I try my best, and, I'm on... My first sponsor I had, he moved out of town, and I worked up to the 4-step with him, and I got a new sponsor when he moved, and now I'm on my 3rd sponsor, and I've had him for, he's been sponsoring me for 2.5 years, and I've done all 12 steps with him. I try to keep in contact with him as much as possible. We talk fairly regularly, and I just try to do the deal that the way it was taught to me, and it's the triangle. I go to meetings and I work my steps. A lot of my friends are alcoholics, and I fellowship with them at meetings and outside of meetings. And I've always had service commitments. Right now, We won the bid for the All California Young People in AA convention. It's about a 2,000 to 2,500 person convention, and I went to my first one when I had about a month and a half sober, and it blew my mind. It was crazy to see 2,500 young alcoholics who are serious about sobriety you know, staying this friendly for after the main meeting. And that Young People's has been a huge part of my sobriety. I mean, it's not, people think it's like separate than regular AA, and it's from what I've found, it's not. You know, we all have sponsors and we all work the steps and we're all in service. And it's not exclusive. There's people in our group that are older, you know, because we're all young and stupid, so we need people that have some time and experience to direct us a little bit. But I don't know. That something my wife always says is it's not really. What we have to put in here is not really equal to what we get in return. You know, when I came in, all I wanted to do was not have to drink anymore the way I was. And, you know, like all that other stuff, like the dreams I had when I was a kid and, you know, having a life and getting a job and, you know, getting married and having kids and all that stuff was just like, I couldn't even think about that because, you know, it just was so far away. Like I couldn't even imagine any of that stuff because I was just like a street bum. I just didn't want to drink anymore, really, and that's, I would have been happy with that, I think. But you know, the longer I stayed sober, the more I realized, like, really, I can do anything I want. You know, I went back to school and graduated, and you know, I've gotten married in sobriety to somebody in the program, and we have a great relationship. It's the first good relationship I've ever had. All my relationships prior were me using them or them using me. They weren't. My sponsor always talks about fair and equal. They weren't. They weren't good relationships. Like we weren't supporting each other, and you know, like my relationship is like that today. And, you know, it's not, those are things that were, as I stayed sober, were like things I wanted to do in my life. They're not like guarantees of sobriety, but, you know, just the fact that they're like, a lot of those things are possibilities for me nowadays is crazy to me. You know, I couldn't keep up relationships with my family. You know, I had no relationship with myself. Like, it's just, it's crazy. The things that have happened to me since I got sober. I don't know. This year has been interesting. It's it seems like every year, you know, life still happens, and every year I'm having to like learn how to do new things, like new life things. And you know, I've had service commitments before, but the service commitment I have this year is I don't know, it's overwhelming. I'm the treasurer for this host committee, and this conference they throw is like a $25,000-$30,000 conference, and I feel like I got in over my head. But you know, I've always kind of, as long as I do the work here, I've kind of found a balance, and it's not always easy, but you know, I kind of stumble my way through it, and with my support group and my sponsor and their experience, you know, things seem to work themselves out as long as I keep trying to do the right thing in the program. You know, I don't really know. Sometimes I think about, you know, like I have friends that are newer and friends that like relapse, and talking about and thinking about the way my life was back then and how far my life has come in sobriety. I think about the things I used to do to myself, and it's just, you know, other than God's grace and the program and the people that have helped me along the way, like, you know, I don't know what would have, you know, what would have really happened to me. I know what would have happened to me. I would have died at some point or just lived on in a miserable existence. But, you know, I for a long time, I didn't hate AA, but, like, I guess I kind of did hate AA because I knew for a while that, a while before I got sober, that it was probably the only way I was ever going to get sober and stay sober for any period of time. And I didn't want to have to go to meetings for the rest of my life or do this work. And, you know, what I've had to do for the life I have is just, it's nothing, you know, compared to the life that AA has given me. When I came in, I just wanted to be okay, and you know, I can honestly say that I'm happy now. You know, just small things that, like, weren't there when I came in. Like, I'm employable. I've had a job for quite a while, and I couldn't keep a job for any amount of time. I would just, I would usually quit or get fired. Usually quit because my ego couldn't take getting fired. So, I don't know. AA has blessed my life, and God has blessed my life, and the little amount of work that I've had to do is just, it's just been nothing compared to that. Thank you for letting me speak.
Because now we have an opportunity, if you would like to ask some questions of our speaker, particularly about his involvement in the Young People's Program up there in Fresno, which he is very active. So think about it and ask some questions.
Sorry, I was trying to speak longer than that. I don't usually speak for very long. So my parents basically didn't want to have anything to do with me. I wasn't allowed at their house. The last year I was at their house, like, things were locked and put away, and I wasn't allowed in certain areas of the house, and you know, because I had stolen stuff and pawned stuff, and you know, it's when I got sober, I had nowhere to go. And I begged my parents to let me come and stay with them for a little while. And they basically told me that I couldn't be on anything and I couldn't be drunk. And that they were going to test me. And so I stayed there and I was only allowed in their room. And I couldn't close any doors for anything. And, you know, it's today... you know, me and my wife go and have dinner with my parents at least once a week. We go over to their house all the time. And, you know, like I talk to my parents about real stuff. Like, I used to hate talking to my parents. It would just be like the chit-chat, like, how's it going? Good. And, you know, I've been able to make amends to my parents and, make financial amends to my parents and or start to. That's going to take years. I don't know. You know, the relationship that I've built with my parents from staying sober is just, I don't know. It's crazy because I just think about, like, what was my relationship with them before? It was, you know, I just use them, and I don't know. It's crazy the relationship I have with my whole family, because I use my sister too, and made them feel sorry for me, and And, you know, I'm so close to my parents and my sister now. Like, we go on vacations together and stuff, and it's been an amazing gift that sobriety's given me. Thanks,
Dad. Here was the young lady right over here. Yeah.
Well, so basically, when we started, it's a service committee. We do service in our local area, and it's a service committee that bids for conferences, and mainly we were bidding for this All California conference that moves all around the state. But while we're bidding, you know, we did TICPC, which is public information in cooperation with the professional community. We would go into treatment centers and high schools and speak, and we just kind of did service all around, trying to kind of unify our community. There's there's a lot of diversity in town, so our Saturday night meetings held at the Native American Treatment Center in Fresno, and we tried to get involved with the Hispanic community. There's a really large Hispanic fellowship in Fresno. We were just trying to basically most of the year be of service to AA as a whole in Fresno, and then we did for this conference every year. Now that we've gotten it, there's going to be a conference in March at the Radisson and the Convention Center downtown in Fresno. And you know, one of the bid requirements is a need statement, why you need the conference in your area. And there's a lot of young people that are struggling to get sober throughout the valley, and we felt like, you know, having that conference in the Central Valley would be a big thing for people in the valley to kind of rally around, because it going to that conference when I had a month and a half sober just changed my life. Thanks. You know what? It's funny because I never went to any meetings there. And at the time when I went there, it was like early 2000s. There was like two cops in all of San Luis Obispo, so none of us ever got in trouble. But when I actually, that last time I woke up in that hotel room, and my parents told me I had to dry out before I moved in, I went back to San Luis Obispo and stayed with my sister for 2 weeks and dried out. And I did go to meetings there, and there was a meeting upstairs downtown that I'd go to on Thursday nights, and you know, I guess that's kind of where I first started really getting the message. Alan? Good, how are you? I don't know. I'm sure people would say negatively that I drink way too much energy drinks and smoke probably too much cigarettes. But you know, I don't know. We've kind of had this core group of young people the whole time I've been sober, and most of them had multiple years when I came there. And kind of what I was talking about is earlier. It was hard for me to see past the outside of people when I got here and really listen to somebody's story and what they'd gone through in their life and their experience, and just seeing people my age, some of them younger than me, that had time and that were actually working in the program. I just figured kind of everybody was like me, and if they were young and they were here, they were kind of just like hanging out or on a court card or whatever. And you know, a lot of those people do a ton of service, and they sponsor a lot of people, and you know, other than the stuff I've gotten from my sponsors, you know, that's kind of the program I work the program that I've learned from a lot of the people there. And I don't know. It gave me something to do early on, because a lot of the meetings I was going to, you know, we get out of the meeting and some people might go to coffee or go and have dinner, but, you know, I was crazy and I couldn't sleep for a long time, and there was people like me, and we would go out and cause trouble sober, and, you know, it like, people talk about, like, not thinking that they can have fun in sobriety, and, you know, that from the beginning showed me, like, I can have a lot of fun in sobriety, you know, without alcohol and other substances, and I don't know, that was important to me early on, because I was pretty young when I came in. I guess I'm still kind of young. Yeah. There, one of the members of our committee she got sober when she was 16, and I think she's 22. And you know, it's, people discount some of the, I did, discount some of these people that get sober when they're like 16. It's like, you know, because when I was 16, I was like smoking pot and drinking, and hearing these, some of these people's stories, I'm like, man, that's, you're definitely an alcoholic. It varies from group to group. Most of our group has sponsors outside of the group, and if any of the members do have sponsors within the group, it's some of the older members. But some of the groups out of town have a lot of sponsorship within the group. I mean, it all depends. Like, some of the groups up in the Bay Area that we're close with, they do a lot of sponsorship within the group, and I think, you know, it just depends on how strong the sponsorship is. There's a, in the East Bay, that group, there's a lot of younger guys that sponsor people, but it's really strong sponsorship. It's good program, it's book oriented, and you know, it's kind of nothing different from the way our group is. You're welcome.